It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the weekly download. I am Jim Dolan, and we are going to listen today to programs from South Africa. Now, South Africa had old-time radio that went much longer than ours did. Ours was basically off the air by the early 60s. South Africa being a big place, not too many big cities, they had to rely more on radio to get back out into the bush and all that. The programs are interesting, and they're similar to what we did here in America. Now, we're going to have an episode of Lux Radio Theater from South Africa, The Sound of Murder, and that's coming up in about 30 minutes. But first, we're going to listen to a program called Squad Cars. And this is a police procedural, a little bit like Dragnet. This is from 1972, and it's called A Jealous Husband Kills.
General Motors and their dealer organization throughout Southern Africa proudly bring you the drama, the danger, the thrills, and the facts when the long arm of the law travels in squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
On the 7th of February, a flat in Delano Court, Jeppy Street, Johannesburg. The occupants of the flat, Mr. and Mrs. Perry Brinkman, have just come home from a party.
What do you want to do that for?
I want to bang the door. I'll bang it.
Yeah, that's your frame of mind, is it?
Yes, it is.
Well, calm down. It's all over.
And what precisely do you mean by that? Is it all over for good? Or you mean the agony at that party is over?
Now just leave it alone.
I want you to know that I've just about had enough. You made a fool of yourself and you made a fool of me. Everybody was talking about it.
About what?
The way you carried on with that Harding woman.
Oh, a mild flirtation. Nothing to it.
Nothing to it, eh? Well, just look at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah, something bothering you, eh?
That lipstick round your mouth. Mrs. Harding's lipstick.
She didn't mean anything by it. She had a bit too much to drink, that's all.
I wonder how you'll carry on when I start this little game.
Don't pack it up.
Don't you talk to me like that. Who the devil can that be at this time of night?
Well, aren't you going to answer it?
Honestly.
Where is he?
We don't want any trouble, please. He didn't mean anything by it.
Get out of my way!
Perry, he's got a gun!
It's 11:43 when Russell Harding pushes Marge Brinkman aside and stalks into the flat brandishing a Schneider 32 automatic.
Where are you, Brinkman?
I'm here.
Skulking in the kitchen, eh?
Not skulking. I'm not scared of the likes of you.
Oh, is that so? Well, I thought that'd be your attitude, and that's why I came with this.
You don't frighten me.
You swine, you rotten swine.
Please, Russell.
Please, nothing. He deserves this. He's not fit to live.
Oh, don't leave it alone.
No.
Perry!
Don't cry, Marge. You're better off without him.
12:04 a.m. on the 8th of February. One of the many phones at Brixton Radio headquarters, the phones connecting the public with the flying squad, rings.
Police, Constable Williams speaking.
My name is Mrs. Brinkman. My address is number 43 Delano Court, Sheppy Street.
Yes?
My husband has just been shot. He's dead.
Who shot him?
It was a man, a friend of ours. They sent somebody over. I don't know what to do. Perry's dead and I don't know what to do.
Oh, well. Sounds like a nasty business for somebody. Well, keeping us busy tonight.
What you got?
A shooting.
Oh, give me the 280.
Thanks. Didn't have a chance to get her phone number. I was on the point of asking when she hung up. She says her husband's dead.
Yeah, now, who should I give this one to? Number nine, number nine. Where are you, number nine? Over.
Just leaving a building site in Hillbrow. Some lunatic started an excavator. Had a devil of a time stopping it. It's all right, though. We managed to contact the director of the firm. Nothing serious, just mischief. What have you got for us? Over.
A shooting in Jeppy Street, Delano Court.
The name's Brinkman. The flat number is 43. She says that a friend of theirs did it. Over.
Flight control. We're on our way. Over and out.
Domestic trouble, sir.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right, get this thing moving.
Yes, sir. Delano Court. Can't remember seeing that one.
It's quite near the post office. Go via Clane and King George Streets. That's your quickest route.
All right, sir.
12:15 a.m. Car number 9, driven by Constable Maxwell and crewed by Warrant Officer Pringle, arrives outside Delano Court. The two men climb out of the car. They go into Delano Court and take the lift to the fourth floor. Number 43 is next to the lift. And the door is open.
Is it Brinkman? Anybody there?
Yes, please come in.
Good morning.
Morning.
What happened?
It was Russell Harding, friend of ours. There was some nonsense at a party.
What sort of nonsense?
Well...
come on, Mrs. Brinkman. I know how difficult it is for you, but you must try and pull yourself together.
It's too dreadful. Perry's dead. It just isn't bear thinking about. Awful. Awful. I'm sorry.
It's all right, Mrs. Brinkman. Whenever you're ready.
Well, we met at the Hardings a year or so ago. We got to know them through some other friends of ours. We seemed to hit it off as a foursome. We went everywhere together. I didn't know that, well, Perry had developed a thing about Joe.
Who's he?
No, it's short for Joanne. Joanne Harding. It started innocently enough. Little remarks, jokes. I had no idea it was leading up to something. But that's what happened. They began, Joanne and my husband, to see each other alone, if you understand what I mean.
Yes, perfectly. Go on.
Russell, that's Joanne's husband, became suspicious, and he had a private detective put on to following Joanne. That's when it all came out. There was a big scene then. But they both promised that it was all over. They said they'd been very foolish. They said they wouldn't see any more of each other. Anyway, we went to a party tonight, not knowing that the Hardings would be there. It was awful. And this thing that Joanne and Perry had for each other started all over again. I disappeared from the party, and someone said they were in the summer house by the swimming pool together. I knew there was going to be big trouble, so I went down to the summer house and dragged Perry home. I wanted to get him away before Russell got hold of him. Russell's got a terrible temper, you see. It nearly came to blows the first time, after the private detective. Well, we were here, hadn't been home more than 10 minutes, when the doorbell rings. I went to open the door, and... there's Russell with a gun. He pushes me aside, comes in and... Oh, you can see what he's done.
Yes, it's a bad business.
I never thought it would come to this. I always warned Perry of big trouble, but... I mean, who can foresee things like this? Russell came in like a maniac. I've never seen a man in such a state.
Well, Mrs. Brinkman, there's nothing we can do for your husband.
Yes, sir. I realize that.
Have you any idea where Harding's gone?
No, he just walked out. I seem to remember hitting him on his back with my fist. He just walked out.
Did he come here in a car?
He must have done.
Did you perhaps go out onto the balcony and see him leave?
No, I tried to pull myself together and I phoned you people.
I see. Have you got his address?
Let me see. Yes, it's 611 at Tilbury Heights.
Tilbury
Bruce Street. Hillbrow.
Bruce Street. Hillbrow. All right, Mrs. Brinkman. The constable will stay here with you while I go down to the car and report what's happened to the murder squad.
All right, got all that. We'll get hold of the district surgeon and pass it on to the Brixton murder squad. Over.
It seemed like a good idea for Maxwell and I to go to that address in Hillbrow. It's possible that he's pitched up there. Over.
All right. If you need help, just report in. Over.
Will do. Over and out.
A.M. An investigating officer has arrived at the scene of the crime, along with a detective sergeant and a detective constable. A doctor is there, too. As soon as he's able, Warrant Officer Pringle leaves the flat in Jeppy Street, along with Constable Maxwell. They descend to the street below and climb into squad car number 9.
Now, sir,
we've got a little call to make.
Are we going to the killer's flat, sir?
The alleged killer's flat. The man's innocent until he's proved guilty.
All right, sir. It's just a technicality. But there's an eyewitness, Mrs. Brinkman.
True. I don't think a judge and assessors will have much trouble reaching the same conclusion as you did. You see what happens when married couples start messing about.
Oh, I've seen it before, sir. I've never been involved in such tragic consequences. Which street is it, sir?
Bruce Street.
Right, sir.
A.M. The policemen arrive at their destination, Tilbury Heights. Constable Maxwell is already heading for the entrance when he notices that the warrant officer is making for the basement.
No. We're going this way, through the garage. I want a word with the night watchman. He's over there, fast asleep. Come on, you wake up. Hey, wake up. Come on, sit up.
Yes, Babas.
There's a Mr. Harding lives in these flats. Do you know him?
Yes, I know him.
Uh-huh. Well, which is his car?
Just a minute, Buzz. Buzz Harding is not here. He parks over there in bay number 13. He's not home yet.
Does he always park his car in the basement here?
Excuse me, Buzz.
I mean, does Boss Harding sometimes leave his car in the street, perhaps?
Maybe sometimes, sir. I don't know.
Has he been in here tonight?
No, sir.
Well, how do you know? You were fast asleep.
I'm always hearing the cars. He's definitely not been here.
All right. You can go back to sleep now. Come on, Maxwell. Sixth floor for us. Next one. Just stand away from the people.
Right, sir. Try the bell, sir.
Looks as though we're in luck, Maxwell.
Luck, sir?
Obviously hasn't been here yet. Now, you go down to the street and move the car.
Right.
Put it around the corner away from the front of the building and the entrance of the garage.
Right.
Then come back up here. If and when Mr. Harding does pitch up, he's going to find us waiting for him.
A.M. Constable Maxwell, having parked the squad car out of sight, returns to the building to find Warrant Officer Pringle in the foyer, scanning the board bearing the names of the occupants of the flats.
Now, where the devil is it?
What are you looking for, sir?
The caretaker's flat.
Caretaker. There you are, sir. 118, first floor.
Good. Let's go up and wake him. Police.
Never a minute's peace around this place. Police. So one thing, it's another. Trouble with the staff. Trespassing or something?
No, it's nothing like that, sir. The people in 611 have been involved in a shooting incident.
Is that so?
I'd like the key to 611, please.
You've what for?
Well, there's a chance that Harding will come back here. We want to be in the flat when he arrives, sir.
Well, if I can help it.
What do you mean?
So how do I know that you're telling the truth?
Oh, for goodness sakes.
How do I know you are who you say you are?
All right, you are. Here's my certificate of appointment, sir. See the photograph? That's me.
Yeah, it seems to be all right. But I'm not giving you the key.
But why not?
Where's your warrant? You people can't just go bursting into other people's homes. Let me see your warrant.
You're being unreasonable, sir. Harding is a murder suspect. Anyway, we don't need a warrant.
I can't believe it. Altogether too nice for that sort of thing. Very nice people, the Hardings. Never any trouble.
Smithers. Well, Mr. Smithers, sir, give me the key to Harding's flat. We're not going to touch anything. I just want to be waiting for him when he arrives home.
No, I can't allow it. It's more than my job's worth.
Well, sir, you're being deliberately obstructive.
You're entitled to your opinion, of course.
All right, I'll just have to make other arrangements.
Yes, you do that. You know what your job entails, and it's the same with me.
Come on, Maxwell. Miserable old devil. We'll sit here on the fire escape. We can see everybody coming and going.
All right, sir. We do mean to say, don't we?
Yes, it takes all sorts to make a world, Maxwell. We'll just have to do it the hard way.
Oh, suit three, sir.
Ever sat on a fire escape before?
No, sir.
Well, you'll find it a numbing experience.
A.M. The weather is decidedly chilly for February. Constable Maxwell is wishing that he had a jersey on under his tunic when they hear the approaching clatter of a woman's heels.
What do you bet this is Mrs. Harding?
I think so too, sir.
If she stops outside 6:11, then it's her for sure. Come on, Maxwell.
Mrs. Harding.
You gave me such a shock.
Sorry, we're actually waiting for your husband.
Oh, I see why.
Where is he?
I don't know. What's been going on?
Isn't your husband with you, Mrs. Harding?
No, we were at a party together, but we left separately.
I see. What time did your husband leave the party?
Look, would you mind telling me what all this is about?
Is your husband with you? Downstairs, perhaps, parking the car?
No.
Oh, that's a pity. I'm afraid there's been some bad trouble, Mrs. Harding. Your husband shot and killed Mr. Brinkman earlier tonight.
He did what?
I'm afraid so.
That's not Russell. He couldn't. He didn't care that much.
I've had the whole story from Mrs. Brinkman.
You're not pulling my leg, are you?
No, I'm afraid not.
Harry dead. It's hard for me to... I think I'd like to sit down.
If you'll give me the key to the flat, I'll open it up for you.
I'm afraid I haven't got a key. I thought Russell would be home by this time.
No.
Well, we can't get in there. Russell's got the key.
I see.
Well, I'm going to have to sit somewhere. I don't feel at all well.
What about the caretaker, sir?
Yes, that's a good idea. You can get the pass key from him, Mrs. Harding. He's a crusty old devil. He wouldn't give it to us.
All right.
We'll go down together.
Well, I mean, it's a different matter giving it to you, Mrs. Harding. These men may be policemen, but they're strangers to me. And I have strict instructions from the agents. It's more than my job's worth.
Yes, all right, Mr. Smithers. The key, please.
I mean, all sorts of funny things happen these days. Could have been thieves in disguise.
The key, Mr. Smithers.
Yes. Here you are.
Thank you.
Sir?
Yes, what is it, Maxwell?
A man just got up in the lift, sir, to the sixth floor.
Did he see you?
No, sir.
What did he look like?
Medium height, stocky, dark, navy blue suit.
Wavy hair?
Yes.
That's Russell.
I think you'd better stay out of this, Mrs. Harding.
Why, what are you going to do?
We're going to arrest him, and he's got a gun.
You mean there's likely to be shooting?
That depends on your husband.
Do me a favor, please.
I will if I can.
If there's any trouble, call me. Let me talk to him.
All right. Come on, Maxwell.
A.M. The two police officers go up in the lift to the sixth floor. Silently and with great caution, they approach flat 611. The door is shut.
Who is it?
Police.
What do you want?
Silly question, Mr. Harding, under the circumstances.
I'm not coming out.
Now, don't make things any more difficult than they are already. Be sensible, man.
Brinkman had it coming. He only got what he deserved.
That's not for me to decide.
Yeah, he's been getting on with my wife. She's as bad as he is.
Yes, I know the whole story. I'd advise you to pack it up now.
They started again at the party tonight.
Come on, Harding. Be a sensible chap. Open the door.
Locked on your life.
Then we're going to have to break it down.
I've got a gun here. Put your shoulder to that door and you've had it.
We've got guns too, you know, Harding, and there are two of us.
I don't care how many of you there are. Put your shoulder to that door and I'll shoot.
Sounds as if he means it, sir.
Yes, well, we'll soon see. Now, just get out of the line of fire. I'm going to bend down and thump the door with my fist at the bottom.
Right.
We're coming in, Harding.
Well, I've told you what you can expect. You see, I'm not fooling around.
You're being a fool, man.
I've killed one man, so it doesn't matter now.
What do we do now, sir?
I think it's a job for the captain.
Did you receive all that, sir? Over.
Yes, I'll be over there right away. Over.
May I suggest, sir, that on your way here, you pick up a canister or two of tear gas from the armory. You never know, sir. Over.
Yes, I'll do that. I'll be with you in about 15 minutes. Over.
Very good, sir. Over and out. And that's where he blasted us through the door, sir.
Tough cookie.
Yes, sir. His wife said that she'd like to talk to him.
Fine. Perhaps she'll succeed where we've failed.
Mm. Maxwell.
Sir.
Go down to the caretaker's flat and bring Mrs. Harding here.
Yes, sir.
Go on, Mrs. Harding. Talk to him.
Russ? Russell?
What do you want?
Oh, it's a terrible thing you've done to Perry.
Yes, so what about what you and he have done to me?
Oh, well, I don't suppose it matters now.
You deserve what he got. Except that killing's too good for you.
Don't step in front of the door, Mrs. Harding.
You hear me?
Yes, yes, I hear.
It was all happening again, wasn't it, eh? You were...
Russ, please!
Come away, Mrs. Harding, that's enough. We're wasting our time.
Oh, don't hurt him. Please don't hurt
him. It's him. He's trying to hurt us.
But we can't help it. He's not himself. Just let me talk to him a minute longer, please.
Right, once more. But keep away from the door. He wants to kill you, too.
Russ, please. Things are bad enough without making them any worse. I know it's my fault, but I couldn't help it.
I don't care what happens to me now. He's dead and gone, a swine.
So you're not going to listen to me?
Not a chance. You can go to that devil for all I care. After the way I loved you, I was prepared to understand the ones. Forgive. Let bygones be bygones. But I always felt that you'd start again, given half a chance, and by heaven you did. Well, I hope you're happy with the outcome.
Well, I tried, Russ.
It's too late.
Leave it, Mrs. Harding. It's over to us now. Constable Maxwell will take it out of the caretakers until it's all over.
Come along, Mrs. Harding.
Now listen to me, Harding. If you don't come out and give yourself up, we're going to have to come in there after you.
Just try. I've got enough ammunition here to hold up an army.
Somebody's going to get hurt. It could well be you. You've showed us how cheaply you hold life now. But we can play it just as tough as you.
Yeah, that's just a lot of soft soap. Just words. What are words compared to what I'm feeling?
Well, I give you due warning that I shall have my men break the door down and open fire on you. You can come out alive or dead. It's entirely up to you. I prefer that you stood trial.
No! No!
He's only got one shot left in that clip, sir.
We can't be sure of that. He says he has more ammunition. He may well have inserted a new clip.
So what do we do, sir?
Well, we'll have to smoke him out. This window here. What's the window of?
One way to find out, sir. It's the bathroom, sir.
So what are you doing? What do you think you're doing?
One shot left, eh?
Yes, sir.
I may be on the way out, but I'll take you all with me.
Is the door to the bathroom open?
Yes, sir.
What does it lead on to?
A sort of passageway, sir.
Right. Return his fire. Drive him off, and I'll lop this canister of tear gas inside when I give the word.
Right, sir.
Ready?
Yes, sir.
Right. Open fire.
Yes, sir.
Here's the canister.
Tear gas, eh? Well, it will need more than this to get me out.
bounces and rolls through the open door of the bathroom into the passageway from where Harding is covering the door of the flat and the window of the bathroom. Even before it stops rolling, the canister emits a white cloud of gas. It spreads rapidly, and it's not long before Harding has to resort to holding a handkerchief to his mouth and nose.
Come on, Harding. It's all over. You won't be able to stand that for more than a couple of minutes. Throw your pistol into the bath and come out with your hands up.
No, I don't.
That's why we're in no hurry. Just want to save you a lot of pain and misery. I've got more. You can have that too if you want it.
All right. I'm coming out.
The gun, sir. His pistol. He hasn't done as you said.
Look out, here he comes. One fourth move, shoot him. Where's the gun, Harding?
Coming out to you.
Now pick up the gun, Constable. And put the cuffs on it, Mr. Pringle.
It'll be a pleasure, sir.
At his trial, evidence was led to show that Harding left the party at which his wife had misbehaved with Brinkman. He'd gone home, collected his pistol, and driven to the Brinkman flat in Jeffy Street. The judge decided that, due to extreme provocation, there were extenuating circumstances, and he sentenced Harding to life imprisonment.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of squad cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another authentic story in our dramatic South African police series, Squad Cars, brought to you by General Motors, makers of the biggest and most exciting range of cars, trucks, and commercial vehicles in the world. Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Beaumont, Chevrolet, Opel, Holden, Vauxhall, Bedford, GMC, and Ranger, South Africa's own car.
And there you can hear that General Motors was in South Africa at the time as well, making cars for that market exclusively, and also some of the main line cars that they do all over the world. Well, now we've arrived at Lux Radio Theater, and Lux Radio Theater was syndicated, the scripts were, and sent around the world as well. The proof of it is this program from South Africa. This is called Sound of Murder, and it's from 1969.
Good evening. This is Peter Tobin introducing Lux Radio Theater. Tonight and every Monday night at this time, Lux Radio Theater presents for your entertainment the finest in radio drama. This week we present The Sound of Murder by Donald Westlake. Amy Thornbridge Walker is a little girl. Abraham Levine is a detective. When a little girl tells a middle-aged detective with heart trouble that her mother has murdered her stepfather by making a loud noise at him, what must a middle-aged detective with heart trouble do? Listen in a few moments to The Sound of Murder, adapted and produced for Lux Radio Theater by Michael McCabe. And now, Act One of tonight's Lux Radio Theater presentation, The Sound of Murder.
This tonight's?
Huh?
A paper.
Oh, yeah. Take it.
Well, thanks. It's
so Pope John the 12th was the first prelate of the Roman Catholic Church to smoke cigarettes in public. Well, that's just great. The whole world conspires against a man who tries to give up smoking. All around me, day by day, people puff at cigarettes. They don't make any fuss about it. They just smoke cigarettes. If I isolated myself against the smokers of the world, cigarette commercials on radio and television would drive me mad. The most popular sentence in all fiction is, "He lit another cigarette." Statesmen, entertainers, all of them, all smoking. Whenever news photographers snap them for posterity.
Quiet tonight.
Sure.
Yeah, being a cop is the most exciting thing in the world, Abe. You know that?
What? Oh.
Come along to Brooklyn's 43rd precinct, folks. Thrill a minute. I'm going to the John. Who knows? I might find a body in there.
Yeah, cockroach. Oh, yes. Sure, that is nice. That is very nice. The governor, cigarette in FDR cigarette holder at a jaunty angle in his mouth. Oh, you're beautiful, governor. The whole world. A grown man who tries to give up smoking is as a comic character, a Robert Benchley or a W.C. Fields, bubbling along, plagued by trivia, life an endless gauntlet of minor crises. They could do a one-reeler on me, a great little comedy, Laurel without Hardy. Hardy died of a heart attack. Abram Levine, 53 years of age, 24 years a cop, 8 years into the heart attack range. When I go to bed at night, I keep myself awake listening to the silence that replaces every eighth or ninth beat of my heart. When I climb stairs or do anything strenuous, those missed heartbeats come closer together. Every seventh, then every sixth, then every fifth. One day, my heart will skip two beats in a row. And then, and on that day, Detective Abraham Levine will stop. Because there won't be any third beat. None at all. Not ever.
Huh?
Huh? Oh.
First sign, you know, Abe.
First sign? What of?
Nuts. Talking to yourself.
Well, I didn't hear you. Come in. Come back.
Heart?
Yeah.
I know a dozen guys with a heart that's kind of suspect. Yeah. What does the doc think?
Well, I went to him 4 months ago. He checked me over. Felt like an old auto brought to a mechanic. Or a boat. You know, a boat. Its owner wanted to know whether it was worth fixing or not. Or just junk that ought to be replaced. Like it might have been necessary to get a new model. The house next door to mine, a baby cries every night. The new model crying for the old, the obsolete, to get off the road.
Well, you got a little skip in your heart. Lots of people have that, Abe.
Yeah, that's what the doctor said. Blood pressure's a bit high, too, but I paid the doctor his fee, but I'm kind of unconvinced. He said if I really wanted to do something for my heart, I could cut out the smoking. I haven't had a cigarette since.
And?
I understand for the first time in my life how those junkies we lock up feel. I'm ashamed of myself, becoming so dependent. But I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
How about turning the fan off?
cool enough.
Yeah.
Why can't the phone ring? Something. Now I'm trying to smoke a pencil. Come in.
What?
Someone at the door.
Oh. Push!
May I come in?
Yeah, of course. Come on in. Sit over here.
You care for a cigarette? No,
Jack, she's,
I want to talk to a detective. Are you a detective?
Yes, I am.
My name is Amy Thornbridge Walker. I live at 717 Prospect Park West, apartment 4A. I want to report a murder, a quite recent murder.
A murder?
My mother murdered my stepfather.
She's a nut. Hear her out and she'll go home.
Tell me about it. When did it happen?
2 weeks ago, Thursday, November the 27th, at 2:30 p.m.
What's your mother's name?
Gloria Thornbridge Walker. And my stepfather was Albert Walker. He was an attorney.
Was your father's name Thornbridge, is that it?
Yes, Jason Thornbridge. He died when I was very small. I think my mother killed him too, but I'm not absolutely sure.
I see. But you are absolutely sure that your mother killed Albert Walker?
My stepfather, yes. My first father was supposed to have drowned by accident in Lake Champlain, which I consider very unlikely, as he was an excellent swimmer.
How long have you thought that your mother killed your first father?
I'd never thought about it at all until she murdered my stepfather. Naturally, I then started thinking about it.
he die of drowning, too?
No, my stepfather wasn't athletic at all. In fact, he was nearly an invalid for the last 6 months of his life.
Then, how did your mother kill him?
She made a loud noise at him. I can't stay any longer. I stopped here on my way home from school. If my mother found out that I knew and that I told the police, she might try and murder me, too. I am not a silly little girl, and I am not telling a lie or making a joke. My mother murdered my stepfather, and I came in here and reported it. That's what I'm supposed to do. You aren't supposed to believe me right away, but you are supposed to investigate and find out whether or not I've told you the truth. My stepfather was a very good man. My mother is a bad woman.
Hey, who's that? Who was she?
She came in to report a murder. Her mommy killed her daddy by making a great big noise at him.
Come again?
I'll check it out.
Yeah, you do that. Kids come in here, they find dead bodies in alleys, and they see flying saucers on rooftops. They report counterfeiters in basement apartments, kidnappers in black trucks.
And one time in 1,000, what a child reports is real and not a product of a young imagination. She did come up here as a joke. A bet, say. Oh, she's a fine little actress. Though, how can I tell? I haven't got any children. It's not easy to communicate with the very young.
Her mommy killed her daddy by making a great big noise at him. Yeah. How many shopping days to Christmas, Jack?
So?
November 28th, obituary notice on Albert Walker. Cause of death, a heart attack. The mortician was Julius Merriman. The doctor was Henry Sheffield. Just been talking to Sheffield.
Yes, so I gathered.
You heard that?
Well, how could I hear Sheffield's part of it? My ears aren't that big. So?
Well, he said it was heart failure, pure and simple. Can't understand why the police should be interested in the case.
Neither can I.
Sheffield said that Walker had suffered a coronary attack about 7 months ago. The second attack was more severe, and he hadn't really recovered from the first. He seemed a bit put out about me calling him. He seemed to think I was implying a number of things, I don't know. He wasn't Mrs. Walker's first husband's doctor. Yeah.
Sorry, I leaned back too far that time.
Don't do that. Every sixth beat. The sixth. Need a cigarette. Need one more than I've ever needed one before. Jack, do you have a cigarette?
I thought you were giving them up.
Not around here. Please, Jack. Of a heart attack. She made a loud noise at him. The second attack was more severe, and he hadn't recovered from the first. It was every sixth beat there for a while, after the loud noise of Crawley's backward dive. Did Gloria Thornbridge Walker really kill Albert Walker? Will Abraham Levine really kill Abraham Levine?
Huh?
Huh?
I thought you said something.
No, I didn't say anything.
Change your mind.
What? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'll ever smoke again.
Problem. If you're coming to me, it must be awful.
It is.
I mean, it's not every night of the year.
Not every night I talk over problems with my wife, I know. Oh, younger men I know discuss everything with their wives, but me? Well, I'm a product of an older upbringing. I still believe women should be shielded from the more brutal aspects of life. I'm getting old.
That's your problem. Don't feel lonely, Abe. It happens to all kinds of people. Have some more gravy.
Oh, let me tell you. A little girl came in today. She was maybe 13 years old. She was dressed nicely, polite, very intelligent. She wanted to report that her mother had killed her stepfather.
A little girl? A thing like that?
No, wait, let me tell you. I called the doctor and he said it was a heart attack. The stepfather, Mr. Walker, he'd had one attack already. The second one on top of it killed him.
But the little girl blames the mother. Psychological, you think?
I don't know. I asked her how her mother had done the killing, and she said her mother had made a loud noise at her father.
A joke. These children today, I don't know where they get their ideas. All this on the TV.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Man with a bad heart, bedridden, invalid, sudden shock, a loud noise. It might do it. Bring on that second attack.
What else did the little girl say?
That's all. Her stepfather was good, and her mother was bad, and she'd stopped off on her way home from school. She only had a minute because she didn't want her mother to know what she was doing.
You let her go? You didn't question her?
I didn't believe her. You know, the imagination children have.
But now?
Now, I don't know. Now, there's two questions in my mind. First, is the little girl right or wrong? Did her mother actually make a loud noise that killed her stepfather or not? And if she did, then question number two, did she do it on purpose or was it an accident? You see, maybe the little girl is right, and her mother actually did cause the death, but not intentionally. If so, I don't want to make things worse for the mother by dragging it out in the open. Maybe the little girl is wrong altogether, and if so, it'd be best to just let the whole thing slide. But maybe she's right, and it was murder. And then, the child's in danger, because if I don't do anything, she'll try some other way, and the mother will find out.
I don't like that, a little girl like that. Could she defend herself? A woman to kill her husband, a woman like that could kill a child just as easy. Huh? I don't like that at all, Abe.
Yeah, neither do I. Question is, what do I do?
A child like that. A woman like that. Huh? And then again, maybe not. For right now, you eat. We can think about it.
It's here.
Again, next door, baby. Move over, world, and give us room. Make way for the new. And they're right. We've got to take care of them. They're absolutely right. I've got to do something for that little girl. That little girl.
You too?
Yeah.
I got to thinking about it myself last night.
We ought to check it out.
I know. I figure I ought to look up the death of the first father. Jason Thornbridge, wasn't it?
Good. I was thinking of going to a school, talking to a teacher. She's the kind of child who makes up wild stories all the time. Then, that's that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. You know what school she's in?
Lathmore Elementary, over on 3rd.
She tell you that? I didn't hear it if she did.
No, she didn't, but it's the only one it could be. I'm pulling a Sherlock Holmes. She told us she stopped in on her way from school. She was walking home, and there's only 3 schools in the right direction. So we'd be between them and Prospect Park. But they're close enough for her to walk. There's St. Aloysius, but she wasn't in school uniform. There's PS 118, but with a Prospect Park West address on the clothing she was wearing and her good manners... She doesn't attend a school like that. So that leaves Lathmore.
Okay, Sherlock. You go talk to the nice people at Lathmore, and I'll dig into the Thornbridge thing.
One of us ought to check this out with the lieutenant first. Tell him what we want to do.
Fine. Go ahead.
Jack, I think maybe you ought to be the one to talk to him.
Why me? Why not you?
Oh, I think he has more respect for you.
What are you talking about?
No, I mean it. If I tell him, I think he'd think I was dramatizing or getting emotional or something, and he'd say thumbs down. But you're the level-headed type. If you tell him it's serious, he'll believe you.
You're nuts.
You are the level-headed type, and I am too emotional.
Flattery will get you everywhere. All right, go to school.
Thanks, Jack. Difficult for us to check it out. It might help if we knew a little more about her, what her attitudes are, things like that. Yes, about this report she made yesterday, you see?
Yes, but what sort of report? Something about this school?
Oh, no, no, not at all.
Oh, her name?
Amy Walker. Amy Thornbridge Walker.
Oh, yes. Amy came to you yesterday.
Oh, that's right.
Well?
You see, I want to know what kind of child she is, and, well, anything else you can tell me about her?
Well, I can tell you she's a brilliant and a well-brought-up child. I can tell you that she's the one I picked to be student in charge while I came here to talk to you. That she's always at least a month ahead of the rest of the class in reading the assignments. And that she's the most practical child I've ever met.
Her father died 2 weeks ago, didn't he?
Oh, that's right.
How did they get along, do you know, Amy and her father?
Oh, she worshipped him. He was her stepfather, as a matter of fact. Amy doesn't remember her real father. Mr. Walker was the only father she knew. Having been without one for so long, well, it was important to her.
She took his death hard.
Oh, she was out of school for a week. Inconsolable. She spent the time at her grandmother's, I understand. I believe the mother had to doctor in twice to her, to Amy.
Yes, her mother. How do Amy and her mother get along?
Normally, so far as I know. There's never been any sign of discord between them, so far as I've seen. But my contact with Amy is limited to school hours, of course.
You think there is discord?
Oh, no. No, not at all. I didn't mean to imply that. Just that I couldn't give you an expert answer to the question.
You're right. Is Amy a very imaginative child? Would you say?
Well, she's very self-sufficient in play, if that's what you mean.
I was thinking about storytelling.
Oh, a liar? No. No, Amy isn't the tall talk type. A very practical little girl, really. Very dependable judgment. Yes, as I say.
I beg your pardon, Miss Haskell.
Oh, no, not at all, Miss... I'm sorry. No, as I said, she's the one... Amy's the one I left in charge of the class.
She wouldn't be likely to come to us with a wild story she'd made up by herself.
Not at all. If Amy told you about something, it's almost certainly to be the truth.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Could you tell me what this wild story was? I might be able to help.
I'd rather not. Not until we're sure, one way or the other.
Well, if I can be of any assistance...
Oh, thank you. You've already helped.
You have all the luck, Abe. You missed the whirlwind.
Whirlwind?
Amy's mama was here. Dr. Sheffield called her about you checking up on her husband's death. And just before she came over here, she got a call from somebody at Lathmore Elementary saying there was a cop there asking questions about her daughter. She didn't like us casting aspersions on her family.
Aspersions?
Yeah, that's what she said. You're a little Sir Echo this morning, aren't you?
I need a cigarette. What did the lieutenant say?
She didn't talk to him. She talked to me.
No, when you told him about the little girl's report.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, he said it'd take a couple of days on it and then let him know how it looked.
Fine. How about Thornbridge?
Accidental death. The inquest said so.
Uh-huh.
No question in anybody's mind. He went swimming too soon after lunch, got a stomach cramp and drowned. What's the word on the little girl?
Amy? Her teacher says she's reliable, practical, realistic. She tells us something, that's the way it is.
That isn't what I wanted to hear, Abe.
Didn't overjoy me either.
No, that isn't what I wanted to hear at all.
What did the mother have to say?
I had to spill it, Abe. About what her daughter reported.
Well, that's okay. Now we've got no choice. We've got to follow through. What was her reaction?
She didn't believe it.
She had to after she thought about it.
Sure. Then she was baffled. She didn't know why Amy should say such a thing. Couldn't understand it.
Was she home when her husband died?
She says no. Somebody had to be with him all the time, but he didn't want a professional nurse. So when Amy came home from school that afternoon, the mother went to the supermarket. Her husband was alive when she left and dead when she got back. Or so she says.
She says Amy was the one who found him dead?
No, Amy was watching television. When the mother came home, she found him and called the doctor.
Now, what about noises?
She didn't hear any and can't understand what Amy means.
All right. We've got one timetable discrepancy. Amy said her mother was at home and made a loud noise. The mother says she was out to the supermarket. After a lifetime of smoking, my hand just...
That's tough. So?
Yeah. What did you think of Mrs. Walker, Jack?
She's tough. She was mad and she's used to having things her own way. Can't see her playing nursemaid. But she sure seemed baffled about why the kid should make such an accusation.
I'll have to talk to Amy again. Once we've got both stories, we can see which one breaks down.
Yeah. I wonder... I'm sorry, Abe. Look, I'll... Mm-hmm.
No. It's...
It's been a lifetime for me, too. I can't.
Sure. Can't change a habit for me, Jack. Just sort of found myself watching you light that cigarette. Yes, I must see Amy again.
I wonder if she'll try and shut the kid's mouth.
Well, let's not think about that now. We've still got all day.
You're going to phone the Walker's place?
No, I'm going to call the school. I'll talk with Amy there. I'll ask that we're left alone. I'm sorry, Amy. I really am sorry. But you see, girl, we had no choice. Your mother had to know.
I think it'll be all right. She wouldn't dare try and hurt me now with you investigating. It'd be too obvious. My mother is very subtle, Mr. Levine.
You have quite a vocabulary.
I'm a very heavy reader.
I want to talk to you about the day when your father died. Your mother said she went out to the store, and when she came back, he was dead. Now, what do you say?
Nonsense. I was the one who went out to the store. The minute I came home from school, she sent me out to the supermarket, but I came back too quick for her.
Why?
Just as I was coming down the hall from the elevator, I heard a great clang sound from our apartment. Then it came again as I was opening the door. I went through the living room, and I saw my mother coming out of my stepfather's room. She was smiling, but when she saw me, she suddenly looked terribly upset and told me something awful had happened. And she ran to the telephone to call Dr. Sheffield. She acted terribly agitated and carried on just as though she meant it, just as though she really meant it. And she fooled Dr. Sheffield completely.
Why did you wait so long before coming to us?
I didn't know what to do. I didn't think anybody would believe me. I was afraid if Mother knew what I knew and what I was going to do, she might try and do something to me. But Monday in civics, Miss Haskell was talking about the duties of different parts of government, firemen and policemen and everybody, and she said the duty of the police was to investigate crimes and see the guilty were punished. So yesterday I came and told you because, well, it didn't matter if you didn't believe me. You'd have to do your duty and investigate anyway.
All right. Well, we're doing that. But we need more than just your word. You understand that, don't you? We need proof of some kind.
Yes.
What store did you go to that day?
A supermarket, the big one on 7th Avenue.
Do you know any of the clerks there? Would they recognize you?
I don't think so. It's a great big supermarket. I don't think they know any of their customers at all.
Did you see anyone on your trip to the store or back that would remember that it was you who went to the store and not your mother? That it was that particular day?
No.
No?
I don't think so. I don't know any of the people in the neighborhood. Most of the people I know are my parents' friends or kids from school, and they live all over, not just around here.
Well, we'll see what we can do. This clang you told me about, do you have any idea what your mother used to make the noise?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. It sounded like a gong or something. I don't know what it could possibly have been.
A tablespoon against the bottom of a pot? Something like that?
Oh, no. Much louder than that.
And she didn't have anything in her hands when she came into the bedroom? Out of the bedroom?
No. Nothing.
Well, we'll see what we can do. You can go back to class now.
Thank you. Thank you for helping me.
It's my duty, as you pointed out.
You'd do it anyway, Mr. Levine. You're a very good man. Like my stepfather.
Yeah. More ways than one, maybe. Well, you go back to class. Oh, wait, there's one thing I can't do for you. Now, look, hope Mrs. Haskell doesn't mind me stealing a piece of paper from her pad. Now, look, this is the number of the precinct, and this is my home number there. Now, if you think there's any danger of any kind, any trouble at all, you can call me. At the precinct until 4 o'clock, and then at home after that.
Oh, thank you. You are a very good man. A very, very good man.
Fan jacket. It's like Antarctic in here. You have a fan on to keep cool, and I wear a coat to keep warm. We were born for different worlds. So?
Nothing.
Same here. Not a thing.
Sheffield says, in his opinion, that Amy's making the whole thing up. That her stepfather's death was a great shock, and all this is some kind of delayed reaction to it. Certainly he won't admit any possibility that Mrs. Walker murdered her husband. Neither can he see any possible motive for such an act.
Well, the only contradiction between both stories, Amy's and her mother's, is the bit about who went to the store the day Mr. Walker died. Fine proof that either Amy or her mother's lying, and we'll have the full answer.
Yes, but who saw them? One or both of them? Nobody. Who could possibly remember? I've asked until I'm sick of asking.
Well, no one remembers. No one saw, no one knows anyone. It's a city of strangers we live in, Jack.
Well, it's been 2 weeks. Their building has a doorman, but he can't remember that far back. He sees the same tenants go in and out every day. And he wouldn't be able to tell you for sure who went in or out yesterday, much less 2 weeks ago, he says.
She's home from school now. I wonder what they're saying to each other. If we could listen in, we'd know a whole lot more than we do now.
No. Whether she's guilty or innocent, they're both saying the same exact thing. The death's 2 weeks old.
Oh, you're right, Jack. If Mrs. Walker did commit murder, she's used to the idea now that she's gotten away with it. She'll deny everything Amy says and try to
convince the girl she's talking out of the back of her neck.
The same things in the same words as if she were innocent.
What if she kills the kid?
She won't. If Amy were to disappear or to have an accident or be killed by an intruder, We'd know the truth at once. Oh, she can't take the chance. With her husband, all she had to do was to fool a doctor who was inclined to believe her in the first place. Besides, the death was a strong possibility anyway. This time, she'd be killing a healthy 12-year-old. She'd be trying to fool a couple of cops who wouldn't believe her at all. She'd probably safer now than before she came to us. Who knows what the mother might have been planning up until now.
All right, that's fine so far. But what do we do now?
Tomorrow I want to take a look at the Walker apartment.
But why not right now?
No, let's give her a night to get rattled. Any evidence she hasn't removed in 2 weeks she's unlikely to think of now. All right, I don't expect to find anything. I want to look at the place because I can't think of anything else to do.
Sure. All we have is the unsupported word of a 12-year-old child.
Yeah, the body can't tell us anything because there wasn't a murder weapon. Walker died of natural causes. Proving they were induced won't be the easiest thing in the world.
If only someone had seen the kid at the grocery store. That's the only chink in the wall, Abe. The only place we can get a grip.
We can try again tomorrow, but I doubt we'll get anywhere.
Tomorrow, maybe lightning will strike.
Yes, 312 Crossfield. Ridgeway, yeah. Huh? Yeah, urgent. 5 minutes. Fine. I had to go out for a while. Be back soon. 10 to 1. Prospect Park, West. floor. Why does the elevator have to be on the 11th floor? It's quicker to... No, not me. As I left the house, that was the phone I heard. The phone! I'm too late. She's made a move already. I was too late when I left the house. Hallway light, too. Blown a fuse. Dark. Too dark. Telephone call as I left the house. She worked it out. She knew I was on my way here. I'll have to call the precinct. They'll need flashlights. It's too dark. Nothing. She heard me fall and she thinks I'm dead. That face, it was only phosphorescent paint on a balloon. A balloon pricked with a pin. The shriek, that probably came from a tape recorder. Full volume. My heart is weak, but not that weak. She tried to kill me. My heart's weak, but not as weak as Walker's, still recovering from... It could kill Walker, the shock, but not me. No, Amy. It didn't work. Don't waste your time. If it didn't work at first when I wasn't ready for it, then it won't work at all. Your mother is dead. You killed her, too. Your father and mother, both. And when you called my home to tell me she'd killed herself, and my wife told you I had already left, you knew then that I knew. And you had to kill me, too. I told you that my heart was weak like your father's, so you'd kill me, and it'd simply be another heart failure, brought on by the sight of your mother's corpse. Do you want to know how I knew? Monday in civics, Miss Haskell told you about the duties of the police. But Miss Haskell also told me you were always at least a month ahead in your studies. 2 weeks before your stepfather died, you read that assignment in your school book. And then and there, you decided how to kill them both. The only thing I don't understand is why...
You'll never understand, Mr. Levine.
No. No, it's you who doesn't understand. To snuff out a life like that, it means nothing to you. You frightened, shocked him into dying.
It was bad enough when it was only her. Don't do this, don't do that. When she had to marry him, and there were two of them watching me all the time, saying no, no, no. That's all they ever said. The only time I ever had some peace was when I was at my grandmother's.
Is that why? That this useless, half-begun thing could kill and kill. Do you know what's going to happen to you? They won't execute you because you're too young. They'll judge you insane and they'll lock you away. And there'll be guards and matrons there to say, don't do this and don't do that. A million times more than you can imagine. And they'll keep you locked away in a little room forever and ever. And they'll let you do nothing you want to do. Nothing. There's nothing you can do to me now. And I won't drink the poison you fed your mother. And your bag of tricks won't work. Not now. You see, I know, Amy. I know. Without even seeing your mother's body, I know. And there'll be a suicide confession forged somewhere, won't there? I know, Amy, I know. I'm going to phone the precinct now, and they'll come and get you. And you'll be locked away in that tiny room forever and ever and ever. You see, I was right, wasn't I, Amy? I know everything. There's your poor mother's body, there on the bed. She looks sad, but not to you, I suppose. And there's the suicide note. See, I know everything, Amy. Everything.
Stay away from me! Stay away from me!
Why are you standing out there on the windowsill, Amy? Won't you catch a cold? Huh? They'll lock you away, Amy, in a tiny, tiny room.
No, they won't! No!
Yes. I know what I've done. I made it end that way. She never understood death, so it was possible for her to throw herself into it. The parents began the child, and the child ends the parents. Another baby. Crying, wailing, saying, make way, we will, but in our own time. Don't rush us.
Tonight's presentation of Donald Westlake's The Sound of Murder. You heard Tony Jay as Abraham Levine, Sean Hewitt as Jack Crawley, and Linda Stewart as Amy Thornbridge Walker. Others in the cast were Sheila Holliday and Beryl Gordon. The Sound of Murder was adapted and produced for Lux Radio Theatre by Michael McCabe.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We're back next week with more great old-time radio, and I hope you can join us then. Till then, Jim Dolan saying, thank you for listening.